Welcome to Ask the Investigator, brought to you by the Journal of Drugs and Dermatology. The JDD podcast illuminates timely scientific content through thoughtful discussion with top dermatology authors. Subscribe to the Journal of Drugs and Dermatology at jddonline.com to browse the current issue and evidence-based peer-reviewed archives.
Welcome back to the latest episode of the JDD podcast series. I'm your host, Dr. Adam Friedman, professor and interim chair of dermatology at GW School of Medicine and Health Sciences. This month, I'm very pleased to welcome a good friend and colleague, Dr. Vivian Shi, who is an assistant professor of medicine and dermatology at the University of Arizona, Tucson. She directs inflammatory skin clinical trials program and oversees both the eczema and hidradenitis suppurativa specialty clinics at her institution. Some of her research involves epidemiology and access to care in underserved and skin of color patients, including underserved regions of the United States, Mexico, Vietnam, China, Nepal, and India. Today, we'll be talking about her newest paper published in the June 2019 issue of the JDD entitled Skin Cancer Epidemiology and Sun Protection Behaviors Among Native Americans. Today's episode is part of a new series of continuing education podcasts to be presented over the next year. The series is supported by an educational grant provided by Orthodermatologix. To find out more and to take the online post-test and earn credit, please visit jddonline.com and click CME in the main menu. Participants who earn a minimum passing grade of 70% on the post-test will be eligible to receive up to 0.5 credit hours of AMA, PRA Category 1, or ANCC credit per podcast. And I promise these questions are not too difficult, should be a slam dunk. Upon completion of this enduring activity, participants should be able to discuss disparities in skin cancer surveillance among Native Americans as compared to the general population, and identify common misperceptions among this population with respect to said surveillance and skin cancer risk. Dr. Shi and I have no relevant disclosures related to this study. So welcome, Dr. Shi. So great to have you here.
Thank you, Dr. Freeman, for the warm welcome. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm excited.
So with that excitement, let's jump right in. First of all, how did you even come up with this study?
That's a really interesting question. So it's really driven by the practical need to better understand the gaps in the Native American population. Arizona, where I reside, is actually one of the states with the highest concentration of Native Americans. And the University of Arizona, Tucson, nearby, there are several federally or recognized tribal reservations. And our medical center is situated kind of in a catchment area. I don't think I've actually taken care of a Native American patient until I moved to Arizona, and it's now a decent percentage of my patient population. So one of the impetus was to gain better understanding about their skin cancer protection and sun behaviors to better help this group of patients.
So as you kind of came up with the survey, were there any hurdles? I mean, obviously this is the first time anyone's done anything like this, and you're right, this is probably not a typical patient population that in the general United States we're kind of thinking about in terms of, you know, what are the needs? How do we have to tailor our sun protection education and surveillance? Given this was kind of a new approach, any difficulties both coming up with it, but also more importantly, disseminating it?
Yeah, so there is a number of difficulties. As you know, there hasn't been much literature in skin and Native American in general. We were doing kind of a lit search when we were designing the study. There's only 30 or so publications over the past two decades on Native Americans, and only 11 of them on skin cancer and sun protection behavior in this population. So the first thing was, how can we find somebody that is familiar enough with the Native American population to kind of get in there to help us collect data? And one of the co-authors of the paper, a medical student of mine, her name is Shannon Watson. She's a Navajo that grew up in a reservation, and she's passionate about advocating for her community. And that's how we got started. So to the best of our knowledge, this is the first study that really solely looked on this topic of the Native Americans. And in terms of kind of formulating our survey, since the Native American reservations are kind of scattered far apart from each other and transportation is kind of limited for the participants, we initially thought, hey, a questionnaire-based study would be most reasonable. But so we initially planned to deploy this anonymously electronically to adult participants, both in person and via listservs. Then we quickly realized we have reached a really big hurdle because while students from Native American organizations may live in urban areas and have access to internet, the same is far from true from folks who live actually in the reservation. Forget about, you know, internet access or, you know, Facebook. Some of them don't even have electricity. So we had to actually meet them at community meetings. And some of these are called powwows that happens frequently in their communities. So on average, our respondents lived on a reservation for 20 plus years.
Wow. So this is well beyond SurveyMonkey. You actually go into the community to really get your numbers up to make this a worthwhile effort.
You're absolutely right. So a part of the respondents, actually, we were able to recruit in person, both in clinics and in student organizations electronically. But to really get in the weeds and to meet the real people who live in the reservation, to get a better understanding about their Sun practice, we went into the reservations where the POWs are. Our students actually travel far to meet these community leaders and members. Wow. You're right.
A for effort there. Go an extra mile. I like it. So what did you find out? What were the results from your study?
Yeah, so we found out a number of things, and we're the first ones that do this. So everything is new and exciting. We found that nearly 90% of our participants have been sunburned. And this is compared to the previous literature showing that about 14% of the African Americans reported prior sunburn. So our population has six times more sunburn than African Americans. So we're trying to interpret this data. We think that, are Native Americans having more sun exposure than the general, you know, skin of color population? Is it unique to kind of the Southwest area? So that's one area that kind of stimulated thought for future research. In addition, we found that about 11% of the Native American population uses sunscreen regularly on the body. Only 11%. A little bit more of them use it on the face regularly, about a third of them. And we also found that 9% of them don't ever use sunscreen because there's kind of the misunderstanding or kind of the perceptions that Native Americans and non-whites don't ever get skin cancer. And so that's a real issue here for their community, because we know that Native Americans do get skin cancer. You know, this is keeping in mind that this Center for Disease Control and the literature have very limited data on the Native American population. And these folks that live in, you know, areas with very high UV index like Arizona are especially vulnerable. The other thing that's interesting is, in contrast to most Americans, a general American population, the Native Americans are less concerned about the cosmetic deterioration due to sun exposure. So they're less concerned about wrinkles and, you know, sun freckles and just volume loss, but they're most apprehensive about getting sunburn. It's the sunburn that actually drive them to protect from the sun and use sunscreen. And despite these findings, only 7.5% of our participants ever report having a skin exam, and most of their health care is received through the IHS, the Indian Health Services, or the tribal health centers, where access to specialty care such as dermatology is especially limited. The latest data shows that there's only one dermatologist that's fully contracted with the Indian Health Services. So you can imagine that this is definitely an area of unmet need for these populations. And in terms of family history of skin cancer, 5% of our participants reported a family history of skin cancer. And the most common one is melanoma, seen in half the respondents. So that's kind of the global findings that we have from this research.
Yeah, I gotta say, I loved your table too with the comments from your respondents. I think that actually there's some very useful information there. So first off, from a skin type perspective, don't like the feel, too oily. My skin is oily. So I think there's certainly an opportunity there to, one, from a manufacturer standpoint, designing sunscreens that are more matted, that may have some kind of, you know, clay component that's good at kind of, you know, absorbing some of that sebum. And already we have products out there like that. So in terms of, you know, thinking about the unique elements of their skin anatomy, directing these individuals to sunscreens that will play nice with their skin and enhance compliance. So I thought that was interesting. I love the misperception. Oh, I live in a cloudy city, very cloudy city. We know ultraviolet A radiation comes through the clouds, so that there's a real opportunity for education there. Would never thought about welder by trade. I could be set on fire. That was an interesting one. And also, I'm pretty sure most sunscreens are not flammable. It's some of the older sprays that if you spray it by fire, but clearly a misperception that you put sunscreen on, you could be set on fire. I think those comments, I mean, there are many more that I think are very useful, don't like chemicals, that really identify common misperceptions, but also ways that we can tailor our education, even product formulation, to address this population that clearly is not behaving appropriately when it comes to a sun protective regimen.
You're absolutely right, Dr. Freeman. Some of these are favorite comments that I've included in one of the tables you just mentioned. We found that there's definitely a lot of room for education for this community. You know, if you look at one of the comments in the knowledge gap part, when we ask, why don't you use sunscreen on your body or your face? One of the response we got was, I didn't know there was such thing as sunscreen. And so that's
a good starting place.
Right, for to in the dermatology community, like you and I. And I feel like we have a lot of work to do.
Yeah. And that's the point. That's a great kind of lead in to what do we do from here? Like, where do we go from here with this data? Obviously the first of its kind. What are the next steps from your perspective? What's there to do on a bigger level than, you know, certainly I want to know how maybe this is impacted your practice, but in a larger scale level, where do we go from here?
Yeah, this is a really interesting question. You know, I think we have to be practical about what we can do as practitioners on a day-to-day basis and what we can do from an advocacy and a policy change aspect. You know, now we have a better understanding about education and practice gaps in the Native American population. We know that number one is education, both in the practice and in our communities, not only on the patient side, but really to kind of work collaboratively with the practitioners who more closely serve the Native Americans. These include the primary care physicians who live in the reservation and who practices there. You know, now I truly spend a bit more time on sun safety counseling for my patients. I have a specific handout for my Native American patients on sunscreen that has a more entry-level discussion on, hey, what is sunscreen? Skin of color folks can get skin cancer and sunburns and sun damage. And some of the products include products that are more readily available in stores on the reservation. So kind of put things into perspective for us a little bit. Some of the patients, I didn't know that they live 45-minute drive from the next Walgreens or CVS. So asking them to buy Blue Lizard sunscreen, for example, or any of the other brands is impractical. And that was a wake-up call for me. So now when they come and visit me in clinic or see their other doctors, I encourage them to do their shopping when they come in to the city. I ask about their access and purchasing them. And sometimes I will ask my students and assistants in the clinic to spend some time with them after I have ended an encounter to do a little bit of education. And I tend to advocate for more sun protection methods that are not consumables, like sunscreen, such as hats, appropriate selection of fabrics and colors that can help them protect from the sun if they don't have access to purchase sunscreen.
Yeah, so it sounds like we're kind of getting a nice invitation to what goes on in your office. You know, it sounds like you do tailor your approach when these patients even do come in, because it sounds like just even getting them in the door might be difficult given what you found in your study. Many think that there's no chance that they can get skin cancer, that they don't need sunscreen, they don't like chemicals. Even, you know, there's one comment about spiritual reasons they don't want to use sunscreen. So let's say somehow we get them in the door. Sounds like you're making sure that they are getting what they need while they're there in, you know, in a city environment, because they may not have access to these easily once they go home. But even before that, what's your pitch for photo protection? You know, obviously there are common misperceptions, you know, individuals who are stuck in beliefs that they don't need this. Before you even say to them, okay, why don't you go pick this up? Go buy this hack, go buy this sunscreen while you're here. What is your spiel specifically for this general patient population that's convinced they don't need sunscreen or any photo protection at that?
Yeah, so I don't know if I have a spiel per se. I think, you know, my conversation is tailored through the specific patient, regardless of their skin color. I would probably say, you know, there's a misconception that the skin of color populations don't get sunburn or don't get skin cancer. And that's the false sense of security, right? Because even though melanin does provide some SPF, we still get UV damage. So if you have a false sense of security about, you know, your natural skin color protecting you from the sun, you're more likely to get sun exposure and get sun damage. And they're at risk of getting skin cancers. And added with the socioeconomic and access to care limitations, my skin of color populations in Arizona and the Native Americans are in particular risk. So understanding the risk is kind of the foundations on advocacy work. And so that's kind of my spiel, is so that they understand that everybody's at risk. You're not safe because of your skin color.
Are there any particular sunscreen recommendations, not saying brands, but in terms of certain ingredients or things that you tell them to look for that you focus more on in darker skin types, Native Americans, African Americans, versus fair skin, or even to the point that was brought up, you know, oilier skin? Are there certain things you guide them on? Because you're right, you know, at the end of the day, the best sunscreen is the one that someone is going to use repeatedly, and that doesn't always work. Not all sunscreens play nice with different skin types. How do you address that in your practice?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I agree with you. Number one thing is pick one that you can afford and that you can use. We can recommend all the fancy ingredients and formulations, but if they're not going to use it, then we have failed, right? And so for the Native American, most of them are skin type 3+. And so I recommend a tinted sunscreen if possible. If tinted sunscreen is not available to them, I ask that they buy a non-tinted one and add a little bit of makeup foundation to it. And this is easier to educate for our female patients and male patients. Some of my male patients, what? I'm going to put makeup in my sunscreen? But it is a way to, you know, to be more cosmetically acceptable when they apply sunscreen if they don't have tinted sunscreen access. Some of the spray-on versions are a little bit less greasy and tend to have a more even coating. And I do tell them that, no, you're not going to become flammable in the sun if you use the spraying ones these days. So those tend to be less pasty and greasy. And nowadays, there are these roll-on sunscreens as well. That's very convenient for folks who kind of work outdoors, who don't have the luxury of applying with their hands because, you know, they're using their hands to work. So the roll-on ones are kind of a contender. You know, the truth is, it's hard for them sometimes, for anybody, to buy a whole bottle of sunscreen and to find out that that's not the one for them. So I try my best to give them a few smaller samples. Hey, try all of these out, whatever you like, then go ahead and purchase. And you can use the tricks for the tinted makeup additions that we talked about.
Now, we talk about sun protection. Just getting through that conversation or having them come in for that is certainly a task in itself. Then let's talk about skin cancer surveillance, because, you know, hopefully you get them in, you're able to do that as well. What is your typical flow in terms of, one, telling them why they need to do this and do this on an annual basis? And then two, you know, I think just because everyone does a full body a little differently, and there was actually a recent JDD study showing that there are significant disparities in how even men and women, male and female dermatologists will perform a full body. Would love for you just kind of run through your gestalt, because I think, once again, everyone does it differently. We could all learn from each other the, you know, best practices.
Yes. So for these populations, getting an annual skin check is definitely a luxury in a way. Most of them I try to catch when they're coming in for a chronic dermatologic problem. So if they're coming in for their atopic dermatitis, for example, I always try to fit in a skin check and some sun protection education. So these folks didn't grow up getting skin checks. So this is like brand new to them, right? So, you know, we have a lot of, you know, Caucasian patients who started getting skin checks in their childhood. So they know the whole drill. Okay, I have to get into a gown. The doctor has this, you know, very methodical way of checking various parts of my body, starting from the scalp. But it's not familiar to them. So I will start with the areas that are not covered by the gown first, because that's a little bit less invasive. So I would start with the head and neck area, and then the arms and the hands to start off. And, you know, I learned, depending on the tribal practices, holding hands for some tribe is it's a bonding experience. And for some tribal community, pointing with your fingers is not acceptable. So learning the intricacies and what their preferences are initially is very important. And once I'm done with the areas that's not exposed, that is exposed, and I would ask their permission to open the gown, I would check the back first. And so it's getting them familiarized with the methodology of skin check. And I find that for Native American populations, sometimes they all have several family members in the room because the whole family is traveling to the city to see the doctors and do their groceries and their shoppings. So having the family members in the room sometimes is kind of a warm environment for them that's less intimidating.
Before you, I just want to make sure this is clear to everyone listening. Two very important things regarding Native American population is that you mentioned no pointing, hand holding is a sign of, you know, collaboration, but also that you're treating a village. You're not just treating a patient, and you need to be prepared for that component because, you know, I feel like from an anthropologic perspective, you know, every culture is different. What their expectations of healthcare are different, and you just hit on three so important ones that need to be taken into account when taking care of this patient population. So I want to jump in there, highlight those things. I think those are so important that if anyone's going to take anything away, those are some very important messages to walk away with.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So every culture, every tribal practice is different. And so these are definitely not the same across boards, but, you know, that's some of the intricacies I've learned taking care of these patients. And also the Native American culture in general, they're not very open about their medical concerns. They're not complainers. So when they come to see a healthcare professional, it's especially intimidating experience. So sometimes it's hard to elicit why they're really here and what's really bothering them. And you may have to ask the question in different ways and get the family involved who's in the room.
Great. Any final take-home messages from your study, from your experiences, you know, obviously caring for and working with this patient population?
That's a great question. Gosh, there's so much work to do. Like, I have so much things on my wish list, but part of it, where do we go from here, right? So there has been tremendous effort to bring telemedicine and teledermatology to the local healthcare providers in the tribal community in an attempt to bridge dermatologic health gaps for these folks. And I think that hopefully the federal, state, and even some local programs could really incentivize some derm practitioners to spend time working with underserved tribes. And dermatology workshops and CMEs like this maybe could be offered to local providers and primary care practitioners to better prepare the Native American healthcare providers and tribal health centers who may not be so well versed in skin cancer screening and taking care of the common dermatologic conditions.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Dr. Shi. Keep building these bridges. I think this is so important. There's such an unmet need here to really address these common misperceptions, but ultimately get these patients the care they need and the surveillance they need and deserve to make sure we keep them nice and safe. So thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. It's such a pleasure.
Great. And with all of you listening in, make sure to tune in next month to the JDD podcast.
You've been listening to JDD podcast, Ask the Investigator, the number one podcast for dermatology pearls. Our host is Dr. Adam Friedman. The podcast is produced and edited by Emily Lynch Fries. Our theme music is Designed for Life by Young Presidents. New episodes are available the first Friday of every month. Check us out at jddonline.com/podcast or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you want to talk to us about this or any other episode, email us at info@jddonline.com. Subscribe and review the podcast on iTunes or Google Play, and don't forget to catch our next episode. Thanks for listening.